The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, a production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. We have two wonderful segments on this episode of the program. In just a matter of seconds, you'll be hearing from Jenna Rocca of the Two River Theater. That's located in Red Bank. They have a series of programs and events to reach out to Blue Star families. Those are the families of military members. And it's not just a single play that they're doing or a single discussion group. It's an entire program which really bridges the gap between the civilian population and the families of the military. Then later on in the program, we'll be talking about the Witherspoon Jackson Neighborhood Stories Project. This is an oral history which is being done in a neighborhood called Witherspoon Jackson. It's in Princeton, New Jersey, and it was one of the first thriving African-American neighborhoods in our nation. It's all coming up now on Humanities Connection. Most Americans understand the sacrifice that is made by the men and women in the U.S. military. We understand it. We appreciate it. But not many of us know about the sacrifices and the hardships of the families left behind, so-called Blue Star families. And there's kind of a disconnect between the general public and military families. Well, the Two River Theater, with the help of the New Jersey Council of the Humanities, is doing something about it. They're putting together a series of educational programs and special events based around a play called The Women of Padilla, but it's not just about the play, it's about so much more. And joining me here in the WFDU TNX studio is Jenna Rocca. She is Associate Director of Marketing for the Two River Theater, which is based in Red Bank. And thank you very much for taking the time to get up here and be with us. Let's start off by just explaining what the play is, because the play, you know, the old line is the play is the thing, but in this case, the play is not really the thing. It's the jumping off point. So the play, The Women of Padilla, what is it? What is it about?
Yes. So The Women of Padilla is a world premiere production that we commissioned and produced by Tony Meneses back in April. And it's the story about eight wives, eight sisters who are related through marriage. So all of their husbands are brothers away at an unnamed war in Mexico. And it's really just focusing on their lives on the home front and how they react and how each of their personalities react when they're just trying to live their normal lives where their husbands are away and the unknowing of whether or not their husbands are going to be coming home to them. It's just exploring all those personalities and that theme, really.
It's interesting that the play is about an unnamed war because you don't have the politics of it or I support that war, I don't support that war. You just look at these eight women and the eight brothers who you don't see. And as it says in your press release, this war has been going on for years and could continue for many more years. So now let's talk about how you have, and you use the word leveraged, your relationships. That sounds like you're threatening people. I know you're not doing that.
No.
But leveraging your relationships with higher education institutes and other organizations to make this so much more than a play and to make this something educational, emotional, and a source of connecting.
Sure. I'll use the word cultivating. Maybe that's a little bit better than leverage.
I like leveraging, though. It kind of shows that you got a little clout.
So from the beginning, Two River, we pride ourselves in not only producing great work, but we want to be connected to the community and connect with new audiences through these themes of our shows. And something like Blue Star Families has been a great resource for us. We are actually a Blue Star Theater, which is a program that was started with Theater Communications Group, a partnership with Blue Star Families, where we offer 20% discount to all of our veterans, all the military men and women and their spouses who serve. So that was an initial thing we did. But in lieu of the theme of the Women of Padilla, we made sure to provide additional programming. So we had some post-show discussions led by various people through organizations that we might have. So we had a partnership with Thomas Edison University and Monmouth University. They have some veteran programs there that
We did a show about that very recently.
Oh,
as a matter
of
fact, Dialogues on the Experience of War was a very recent episode that we did with the people from Thomas Edison.
Well, there you go. Yeah, so we had post-show discussions with them where we invited our audience members after seeing the show to come and just partake in a conversation, ask questions, and just discuss the themes of the military men and women and of the show.
One of the things that you actually got out of this is a relationship with the family of a deceased veteran. Back on April 19th, I mean, this is initially our October 2017 episode. We're probably going to replay it either in December or over the summertime. But when we refer to April 19th, we're talking about 2017. You hosted a reception for a local organization that serves veterans, the Lieutenant Dennis Zelensky II Memorial Fund, and invited their board members and volunteers to see the show and participate in a post-show discussion. You actually have gotten a connection to and a relationship with the Zelensky family.
Yeah, so I got connected with them through the theater, and I attended that reception beforehand, met their board members and volunteers. They came to the show for free, and then they Marion Zelensky, Dennis's mother, actually led a post-show discussion after with some audience members, which was awesome. But I took it even more on a personal level. I run a charity event every year called Karaoke for a Cause 7, and I was so deeply moved and impacted by the work that they do for the active military men and women that I asked them to be my beneficiary organization. Not only do they provide, you know, supplies to the troops, they have this really interesting program with service dogs, therapy dogs, where they train rescue dogs down in Florida, and they provide these dogs as therapy dogs for veterans with post-traumatic stress disorder. So they had so many different things that they were doing that I didn't even know about. And I just truly felt this connection through them and felt led to raise these funds for them this year. So that's how I took this initiative that we did at the theater above and beyond, and still have a relationship with the Zelenskys to this day.
That's great. And that goes to a point that you make in some of the materials which you sent to me for me to prepare for this conversation, that you mentioned that there really is a gap, a disconnect between the civilian population and military families. How did you discover that, and what can we do to bridge that gap and know these people, care about these people, and help them?
Initially, just trying to schedule some of these talkbacks and educational programs through, you know, throughout the show and the run, it was just hard scheduling because a lot of these military men and women are on the move or are hard to get a hold of. So something we learned from hosting some of these post-show discussions was maybe we actually bring ourselves to them. You know, there's a McGuire-Dix joint base right in Monmouth County that we were thinking, you know, maybe we can bring theater games to them and their families there and bring discussions and further educational programs to them, actually bring it right to the base. So we're hoping that we can help be the bridge to that gap. But not only that, just have our audiences open their eyes to a lot of these themes and people.
It really is amazing to think that your mother, your father, your husband, your wife, your brother, your sister could be away for all of this time.
Right.
Every day they're in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
There were stories, I'm a baby boomer, there were stories my mother would tell me about her brother, my uncle being in World War II. But there was a different experience then, even though that was such an overwhelming war and such powerful danger to the entire world, it had an end, mm-hmm. whereas these wars seem to go on and on and on, and that probably adds even more pressure to the Blue Star families.
Absolutely, and I think my eyes were open a lot when Marion made the point when she was talking at one of our events that, you know, so many of us, for Memorial Day, it was right before Memorial Day, this event, and we were like, so many of us are celebrating the start of summer and you know, all the fun things and having barbecues, but take 5 minutes on that Monday, Memorial Day, and think about my son, and think about all these young men and women who are paying us the ultimate sacrifice for our freedom. So sometimes we just need to be brought back to that reality.
Yeah, Memorial Day has really become the day you go down to the shore for the first time and a car sale.
Right.
It's a shame.
Exactly.
Let's, of course, you can't get away without asking the question, what role did the New Jersey Council for the Humanities play in all of this?
Right. So they provided some funding to really back these initiatives, to host these pre-show receptions, post-show receptions. We had a great day for the family called Family Day at the Theater, a salute to our military men and women, where we provided not only lunch but activities. We had a letter writing station to our veterans and to our active military men and women there. Another tie into the women of Padilla was there's this puppetry and symbolism. We had birds in it that represented, like, they came and brought messages, aka they let people know what soldiers were fallen, which ones we lost at war. So whenever a bird came into the scene, you knew that, you know, right. one of the brothers was passing
the
away.
The old image of a carrier pigeon, it became the symbol of how you get the bad
show.
News. The telegrams that came in World War II,
right.
the two officers who may show up at a door now, today, obviously.
Exactly. So we tried to tie that in, but we had, you know, cut out birds, and we invited our guests and attendees to write a message to their loved ones or someone who they have lost. And we made a big mural on our lobby, on one of our walls, with all those birds. So, and those, a couple of these stations, so to speak, we kept in the lobby throughout the run of the show. So, you know, after or before the show, we invited audiences and attendees to write letters to the veterans and to the military men and women, and just really have that connection beyond the show. And so, yeah, we were happy that we were able to have that kind of resource to enable us to do all these things.
You mentioned something earlier called Karaoke for a Cause. And as
yes.
I mentioned, this is originally, the initial airing is October 2017.
Yes.
But we do run reruns. So is Karaoke for a Cause coming up anytime in 2018?
Yes, I do it every May. So it's usually the Wednesday before Memorial Day, which was never really too significant until we did an organization that was military based. So
now here at WFDU, we broadcast into the five boroughs of New York City and North Jersey counties. Eventually,
yes.
This show ends up on the web at www.njch.org, so everyone in New Jersey can hear it. But talking about your theater, it's in Red Bank, which is a beautiful town,
yes.
A northern shore town, just mm-hmm. a little bit above the ocean, just at the very top of the shore.
Right.
Two River Theater, what is it? And in addition to these particular aspects we're talking about in this conversation, tell us just in general about the Two River Theater.
So Two River Theater, we're on our 24th season right now. We just started, and we are a non-for-profit regional professional house, producing house, meaning that we produce everything in-house from audition to the actual show itself. A lot of people get confused between presenting and producing, but yeah, we produce new works. We produce usually some kind of adaptation or twist of a classic. And yeah, we just are really prideful in not only what we produce on stage, but for being truly a member of the community. We try to be involved and give back as much as possible. And we really take pride in doing these additional events to tie into the themes of what we're presenting, so the audience gets even more than a theatrical experience. They really learn. They learn about themes within our lobby displays and events and everything we have to offer them.
And that's the Humanities Connection to all
exactly.
of this, is that even though this is art and this is theater, this is a real humanities aspect of this.
Right.
And just to know about it, I can never tell undergraduates enough how important it is to know history. And we owe so much to our current military members, and living veterans and their families, but also to know about World War II and all of the history and all of these people who have served. Just finally, let's talk a little bit about the idea that people in your military community, which has McGuire Air Force Base, Fort Dix, Lakehurst, mm-hmm. I believe it's a Naval Air Station. Now I understand it's all kind of merged. It's a joint base. But basically, you have a lot of the military down there. They didn't see your theater necessarily as a bridge to them. But now I guess they do.
Right. And you know, we were able to purchase a list of military men and women and start marketing towards them. And we really hope that this is just the starting point to this relationship that we're having, and the few networks, like with the Zelenskys and people, building that trust, building that credibility, and showing them that this is really a place that they can come and enjoy art and express themselves and be who they are. And yeah, just...
And it is going to go on. I mean, we talked about
yes.
the Women of Padilla. That production has come and gone. But
yes.
this relationship that you've set up with mm-hmm. the veterans is going to move on. And I guess just finally, it's really meant a lot to you. Just tell the audience about that as our final statement.
Yeah, at the end of the day, my eyes have just been opened so much more to all the sacrifices that not only the military men fighting in the war do for us on the day in, day out basis, but all the families and everyone that has been affected by it. So I'm really looking forward to future endeavors. Like I said, I think this was a great learning experience, a great jumping off point, and I hope that we can really flourish and make a great relationship and really be the bridge to that gap that we were just touching upon.
Well, I'm glad the New Jersey Council for the Humanities was able to be a part of all of this. And it's a wonderful effort being made on behalf of the veterans and especially their families by the Two River Theater. Joining us has been the Associate Director of Marketing for the Two River Theater, Jenna Rocca. You're listening to Humanities Connection on WFDU 89.1 FM. I'm Bob Mann. This program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. If you want more information about the work of the Council, please go to www.njch.org. There you can hear archives of this program and also find out detailed information about all of the wonderful things that are being done by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Neighborhoods mean a lot to the fabric of American society, but neighborhoods change. They come and go. And very often, it's important for us to know about the people who live there, what they had to say and what they experienced, or else we lose a little piece of our own history. That's what we're talking about on this segment of Humanities Connection. We're talking about one neighborhood in particular, which is connected to an NJCH grant, but it really speaks to neighborhoods all over the tri-state area and the United States. The Arts Council of Princeton is doing something called the Witherspoon Jackson Neighborhood Stories Project. And one of the funders is the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. And on the phone with me right now is Tanisha Nash Laird, who is Executive Director of the Arts Council of Princeton. And we thank you for taking the time to be on the program to talk about this project.
Bob, thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk about this neighborhood, because our radio stations up here in North Jersey, we have a very New York City orientation. In Princeton, what is the Witherspoon Jackson neighborhood?
Well, now, I'm sure your listeners have heard of Princeton, New Jersey, if for no other reason.
Oh, we know Princeton. we just don't know the neighborhood.
Absolutely, but they probably haven't heard of the Witherspoon Jackson neighborhood, which was essentially the thriving neighborhood of African-American residents, essentially from the time of the Depression. Most of the people had originally lived in the area that is now Palmer Square, the shopping district in downtown Princeton that's still thriving today, and they were moved over to this neighborhood as part of the effort to create this business district in downtown Princeton.
So even though this is in the age of discrimination and Jim Crow laws and segregation and redlining and real estate, Witherspoon Jackson, the people who lived there, this was a prosperous African-American community, even in the days of segregation.
Well, yeah, you know, you had it was a working class, working and middle class neighborhood. It was because of segregation. This is where people could live, and so you had a mix in terms of the people and their occupations. It was all types of people. You had people who were laborers, but you also had people who were professionals.
What's the reason to know about the history of this? Why is it important for people to hold on and to hear stories of people who may, some of them probably are, very advanced in years, but why is it important to get this firsthand feel of what this neighborhood or any neighborhood was like?
No, that's a great question. I think in terms of memory, in terms of understanding the stories, if you will, of the people who lived in the community, who walked the neighborhood and helped the community as a whole thrive, because, again, many of them were service to many of the homes and businesses in the town, and especially as the community changes, and it has. You know, a lot of the residents have passed away. Their children have not held on to their homes. It's important for people to know who were here and how they really helped build the community.
In doing some of the research for this, I noticed that Paul Robeson was born and, I guess, raised in this neighborhood. I mean, here is one of the icons of modern American history, a man who was a football star, an actor, a singer, an activist. Sadly, he was reviled for standing up for what he believed in, but a genuine, true American Renaissance man of the 20th century. I didn't realize that this is where he started out. That's an important part of this neighborhood's background and history.
Our building, in fact, is called the Paul Robeson Center for the Arts for that very reason. He was born in the home that is directly behind our building. Absolutely. He's one of our most famous, not just African-American Native sons, but famous Native sons, period.
Let's just talk about the project itself, how it works. Is this a series of audio interviews? Does it have a video component? What are some of the things that, because a lot of this has started already, you still have things ahead of you, but as we record this for our initial October 2017 broadcast, this is, I guess, at a middle stage right now. Tell us about the content and the nature of the project itself.
Right. So we are actually preserving the stories of the people who are there now. And, of course, we are going to be going after the people who are most senior, if you will, in the
neighborhood. That's a nice way to put it, Tanisha.
And those will primarily be African-Americans who have remained here and who can tell us some really great stories of the times of growing up in the 40s and 50s in a really tight-knit community during the time of segregation. And so, yes, that is some of the work that we're doing, and it is going to be video. Some of the work that we've also done at this as part of this project is a celebration of Paul Robeson himself and his birthday. So we already had that birthday party. We're going to do another one when it comes around in April again. That's April 8th again, and it was great. It brought out many of the senior folks in the community, some of whom have told me great stories. One person remembered Albert Einstein, who happens to be one of our other most famous residents. He's not native of here, of course, but residents of the community, and how he was an ongoing presence in the Witherspoon Jackson neighborhood, which was really interesting to hear. So I'm sure we're going to hear more of those types of stories that you would have never known otherwise from the interviews.
How would people be able to get a hold of any of this? Would they need to go to a specific archive? Could they do it online? Are you going to have a site? How are you looking to set this up in terms of media so that somebody who has an interest in the Witherspoon Jackson Neighborhood Stories Project could have access to it?
It will be on our website. The whole idea is to allow for public access to these personal stories. We also plan to preserve them in a physical space and have been in discussions with the most natural places, the Princeton Public Library, as well as the Historical Society of Princeton.
What role did the New Jersey Council for the Humanities play in all of this?
They played a very important role, and that's funding. They agreed that this was a project worth pursuing and have essentially matched the funding that we put up to help us proceed with all of the expenses that are associated with the programming.
Talk about the neighborhood as it evolved. As we broadcast here in the Tri-State area, I think of my background as somebody from Brooklyn and how Bedford-Stuyvesant changed in so many ways up and down over the course of the decades. And, of course, it was just a reflection of what was going on in America in general. What were some of the changes that happened with Witherspoon Jackson from the time of, let's say, Paul Robeson's childhood up until the days of the Great Migration of African Americans from the South versus the period of civil rights, where it is now?
Right. So one other community that was also part of the Witherspoon Jackson neighborhood was Italian Americans as well. So it was African American and it was Italian American primarily during the time period that you just described. Over time, it has changed. There have been more immigrants that have come to the community, primarily from Mexico. And so it continues to be diverse in terms of socioeconomics. It's just that ethnically it is much more diverse than it was during that time. So in this this community, whereas before you found all of your African-American laborers to doctors and everything in between, now it's much more ethnically diverse in terms of the people who have come, primarily because it was also the most affordable area of town. The houses are much smaller. They're closer together. They're within walking distance to the downtown. Well, Princeton is very small, but it was walking distance to the downtown. A lot of the children who owned the homes in that neighborhood decided to leave and no longer keep their family home. So it's pretty much changed significantly, and we're looking at interviewing those newer residents as well as part of this Witherspoon Jackson Neighborhood Stories project.
Is it tough to get people? It's not that hard to get somebody to be on a broadcast radio show, but you tell them we're doing an oral history. Do they say what? And do they hesitate or are they anxious to tell their story?
They're anxious to tell their stories. You know, one of the things I have to put out there, because if there's anybody that knows anything about this particular community where I've lived for a little under 20 years, I'm also a native New Yorker, this community actually has a long tradition of collecting stories. People like to talk here in town so and record their stories. So we have had no shortage of people who have offered. I think there are people that we want to make sure that we get, such as Mr. Henry Pinnell. He's the namesake of a child development center where we do a program and a lifetime resident, and we want to get him. We want to get Evelyn Quartz, who grew up in the neighborhood and was a career counselor at Princeton High School. So we have some people that we absolutely want to get. The first African-American who worked at the university from the neighborhood. We also want to get her. She was the first secretary that was hired. So we do have some gets that we want, but otherwise I think we're not going to have the problem getting the 15 that we want.
That sounds great. And you mentioned Albert Einstein before, and of course you're in the shadow of one of the world's great universities.
Yes.
And I would guess you have a lot of Princeton professors and faculty and staff and administration who are also in the neighborhood at this time too, and I guess they'd be anxious to talk.
As well as Albert Einstein's home institution. I know outside of this area, people think his home institution was Princeton University. It was actually the Institute for Advanced Studies, which is also in town, as is the Princeton Theological Seminary. So we have three major institutions of academia here in town. And yes, our plan is to be very inclusive.
When you look back at some of the things you've already accomplished, you were saying you have some gets you definitely need to go after. Anything interesting in any of the interviews done so far, something that might reveal something, either just about Witherspoon Jackson or about New Jersey or America in general?
One of the main people that have been very supportive of this idea is a woman by the name of Shirley Satterfield. Shirley Satterfield is the historian for the Witherspoon Jackson neighborhood, not just self-appointed, recognized as a historian for that neighborhood. And she tells a story of remembering Albert Einstein taking her by the hand as a little girl and walking her to a store. And so for me, that's like, oh my gosh, that's so amazing. And of course, as a little child, she had no idea. She knew he was important, she said. She just didn't know how important Mr. Einstein was.
Everybody has friendly older people in the neighborhood. Not that many are immediately, associated with human genius.
Yes. Yes, very much so. So I think getting more of those types of stories, but that one absolutely is one that stands out that we've already heard.
My guest is Tanisha Nash Laird, who's Executive Director of the Arts Council of Princeton. Before we finish up with the interview, what exactly is your council? What do you do?
So the Arts Council of Princeton was, thank you for asking, because this is our anniversary year. The Arts Council.
I could pretend I knew that, but I didn't.
The Arts Council of Princeton was founded in 1967. And our mission is building community through the arts, and we do that in a number of different ways. We have community arts education that we do, including a number of outreach classes that we do for under-resourced communities, including lower-income kids as well as seniors. We do a number of public programs. We do a concert series. We do the largest arts festival in Central Jersey called Communiversity. Most people think Princeton University does it. We actually do it, and we've now partnered with them, and we attract 40,000 people to a town of only 28 annually each year with that as well. And that's who we are, a nonprofit that is dedicated to building community through the arts. No, transforming lives through the arts is really the best way to say it.
Well, that's perfect, and that's a great way to end this segment, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And obviously, this is a project which will go on, and I thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Talking about the Witherspoon Jackson Neighborhood Stories Project from the Arts Council of Princeton, Tanisha Nash Laird. That's it for this episode of Humanities Connection. I'm Bob Mann. Thank you very much for listening. This program is broadcast on WFDU 89.1 FM on a monthly basis, and then you could hear it as an archive. As a matter of fact, you can hear archives of all of our programs at www.njch.org. And you can go to that website to read about all of the wonderful programs that are funded by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities.